Since 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been committed to improving the lives of America's veterans, first responders, and their families. For over 20 years, the foundation has helped America keep its solemn promise to never forget. Tunnel to Towers provides mortgage-free homes to Gold Star families and the families of fallen first responders with young children, and builds specially adapted smart homes for catastrophically injured veterans, as well as work to eradicate veteran homelessness. David Marshall served in the Army during World War II and fought in the Battle of the Bulge. He's never forgotten the sacrifices of his comrades in arms, nor the efforts of first responders on 9/11 and in the days and months that followed. He is a loyal and proud foundation donor. Tunnel to Towers is committed to supporting veterans, first responders, and their families, and so many of them need your help. Join the foundation on its mission to do good and never forget. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. If you are an accredited investor, U.S. oil and gas should be part of your investment portfolio. Visit LabradorEnergy.com. Beyond the possibility to invest in a sector that historically delivers sound returns, when you invest with Labrador Energy, you may be able to structure your investment to offset active or passive income. According to many sources, U.S. oil and gas drilling remains one of the best tax-advantaged income investments available. Visit LabradorEnergy.com. You may be able to reduce your tax liability while investing in a sector that has historically delivered sound returns. Learn more at LabradorEnergy.com today.
Offer for accredited investors only. Past performance is no indication of future results. Investing involves risk. Consult your legal, tax, and financial advisors and read the prospectus before making any investment decisions. Visit LabradorEnergy.com for the prospectus and more information.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Buck Brief. On this episode, Inez Stepman is with us. She is a senior policy analyst at the Independent Women's Forum, does some great writing, and has been a friend of mine in this business for like a decade now. Isn't that, we're getting old, Inez. You know, they realize that's what's happening.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a reminder of how old we are.
But we're going to measure our friendship and how many decades we have been hanging out. So, let's start with this. I wanted to get into, and just to give folks a sense of where we're going to go, some DC school numbers about how many people are, absent, truant, but really, are they even going to school at all? That's really interesting to me. Mark Cuban thinking that he should just keep on, it's like a kid burning his hand on the stove, but Mark Cuban with DEI is like, burn it again. Like, he just seems to love doing this online. Like, he loves the pain. But we'll get into that. But first off, I just think this is fascinating. You are a New Yorker. You live there now. It's funny. I used to be a New Yorker.
Well, I mean, I think that's very generous of you, given I know that you're an original New Yorker.
I know.
After 3 years, can I call myself a New Yorker?
New Yorkers who are born and raised there, it's a little bit like the way the Japanese feel about citizenship. Like, we're very slow to call somebody else a New Yorker. Like, we don't really give it out. But no, because you love the city. And you are staying, and you are conservative, but you are staying, and so is Jared, your husband. You guys are in it, right? You're in it to win it. Okay. You live across from a migrant encampment in New York City. Tell me all about this, because I actually haven't been there to see this phase of the city. I was there through the COVID madness. Now I live in Florida. What are we seeing with the migrant situation?
Yeah, I mean, it's bad and it's visibly so, and getting worse, which, I mean, we can talk about. I think the single most potent and successful political gambit probably of the last 30 years has been DeSantis and Abbott sending busloads of migrants to blue havens, because it has truly made it a national problem. And of course, there's the obvious hypocrisy in a bunch of New Yorkers waking up to the fact that this is actually a problem, you know, after they've been calling Hidalgo, Texas, which is dealing with a much worse problem over decades. And they've been basically called racist for their trouble for complaining about it, right? But nevertheless, I think it's been really effective. I do see a lot of people complaining about it. I see people, you know, it's one of those things you just can't ignore. It's also impossible to ignore the makeup of who's coming here. These are young men from 18 to their mid-20s, and they're just hanging out in packs. I get very interesting notifications. I have a app that tracks like neighborhood crime, and I get really interesting notifications like 300 men in a brawl. That doesn't happen without.
I mean, unless it's happening at Thermopylae a long time ago, that's concerning.
Yeah. No, it's a different dynamic than the domestic problems with crime, which are also an issue. But now there's a lot of chatter around some of these guys are forming gangs, and they're just forming like kind of snatching gangs. So walking around the street, grab a bag, grab a phone, they're speeding away on mopeds. But it's organized. It's not a sort of random. It's organized, and there's repeated offenders over and over again. And a lot of people are now, it's self-perpetuating because the sanctuary city policies and the generous benefits in New York are an attraction. So now Abbott and DeSantis don't have to do busloads. The people are staying at the border, you know, Roosevelt Hotel, Manhattan. So that's what's going on. And it is really putting a strain on the city. It's a different experience actually living next door to it. I lived in San Diego for quite some time, and that's the closest I've come to seeing this, but it was much less out of control when I was living in San Diego, even though there were a lot of illegal crossings. The number and, again, the demographic profile of people coming here is, like, the only thing I have to compare it to is, as I was telling you off air, is East Jerusalem. It feels very, very foreign. You feel nervous as a woman alone walking by. It's just packs of young men hanging out all day, doing drugs, drinking, like getting into fights.
And what is the city plan for this? You know, it seems like this is combustible. It's clearly a quality of life issue. It's a safety issue. It's a rule of law issue. I mean, I could go down the whole list. What is Eric Adams saying about this or anyone?
Well, He's been kind of vocal about it. I've been kind of surprised. I mean, obviously my standards are very, very low, given that he is a Democrat, but he's been kind of a burr in the Biden administration's side. I mean, unfortunately, the Democratic resolution for all this, right, the thing that everyone will agree to at the end of the day within that party is we just need to throw more money at this, right? So Eric Adams is complaining about the strain on resources, which, again, is something that border states have been dealing with for decades. But is a very real problem. I mean, we had the headline go viral from the New York Post just, I think, a few weeks ago, where they once again shut down schools, went to virtual schooling in a school in New York, this time not because of a virus and not because of teacher strikes, which have happened in other states, but because they needed the space to put migrants in. So they sent everybody's kids to virtual learning. Those kinds of really direct trade-offs are, I think, what is shifting. That's why I say it's a very successful political gambit in a way. I do think that changes people's minds. And people forget that there was a 17-point swing in New York, I think largely over the crime issue. And now I would add migration into that general crime and quality of life. People are not happy with it. They actually are changing how they vote. Obviously, it's a super blue state, and so it didn't go over the top for the governor. But 17 points is a big swing of people basically switching their votes from Democratic.
It's encouraging, but any person who tells me they think, given what New York City, when I was living there, right, so I was experiencing it too, I have disdain for people who voted for Kathy Hochul. I mean, I truly, I think their judgment is impaired and they're not very bright. Like, I don't really even care what their issues are. If you see what was going on in New York, I know she's the governor, it's not New York City per se, but New York City is the political center of gravity for the entire state. It's obviously a huge part of the overall budget. There are enormous implications for New York City based upon what goes on in Albany and from the governor's office. And to put that And, you know, she was so involved with the COVID situation in the worst possible ways to put that imbecile Kathy Hochul in power for a full term. To me, it's just inexcusable. It's just malpractice.
Yeah, I mean, she's the worst for sure. She's awful.
She's the worst.
I think
did you feel unsafe on the subway? Can I just ask you that? Because, you know, they did that whole National Guard thing recently. It was
that's
a Hochul
what I was
going
to bring up is that, you know, the left basically, because they refuse to put career criminals in prison, want to put the rest of us in prison. Like, we can all live in prison so they can try to accommodate for the consequences of not putting people in prison. I definitely feel more unsafe than I did a few years ago, and for sure more than pre-pandemic, like 2019 on the subway. It still is okay. It just depends, right? You have to be a lot more alert. I've definitely switched cars. That is the biggest problem, is the enclosed space of the subway. And that actually is less of a crime problem and more of a problem of the people being unwilling to put away people who are insane, like drug addicted and insane.
Yeah. Well, listen, right? It's not about a gangbanger. Right. It's not about a gangbanger with, you know, an Uzi on the subway. I know they're doing this whole gun. It's about a lunatic who's going to throw an old lady in front of a train for no reason, who's been arrested 50 times. Right. That's what the dynamic that I can just read about. But I remember it happening when I was there. I saw stuff on the New York City subway. I was born and raised there. And I was there in the 90s. And I remember it as a kid when it was actually at its most dangerous by the numbers. But I've seen stuff on the New York City subway in the most recent years that I've never seen before. I mean, gross stuff that I won't talk about on this show right now. But I saw guys doing things that I was like, things are not going well. All right, let's talk. Speaking of cities, D.C. And the school situation there. We'll get to that in a second. But, you know, if you look around, the world is obviously a volatile place, and markets can change very quickly, and currencies can be in a whole lot of hurt, depending on what the government's doing with inflation and what national spending looks like. So what can you do? I think it's time, if you haven't already, to look at gold. If you look at gold over the last 6 months, it's up some 13%. The price and value of gold is connected to world events, and gold grows in value over time. Just look at history. It's one of the many reasons I own gold as part of my financial plan. It holds value and it steadily increases, and it's something you should consider as part of a diversified portfolio. I rely on the Oxford Gold Group for my gold and precious metal purchases. I've got silver too from the Oxford Gold Group. Nobody can predict the future, but that means you should prepare for it. The Oxford Gold Group are real pros. They make owning gold and silver simple and easy to understand. Call right now. You may be able to qualify for up to $10,000 in free precious metals. 833-995-GOLD, 833-995-G-O-L-D, 833-995-GOLD. All right, Inez, you're an education policy expert and follow this stuff all very closely. This was pretty stunning stuff that the D.C. schools, this has gotten some attention recently, D.C. public school system have a 60% chronic absenteeism problem. What is going on here?
Well, first of all, we lost track of hundreds of thousands of students. And by lost track, I mean, we have no idea what happened to them. They were in school before the pandemic. They ought to have been in school after the pandemic. And we have no idea what happened to them. It was bad before this truancy problem in D.C. I mean, D.C. is a city with a lot of problems that precede the education system. And then the education system, despite being the single most well-funded system in the United States, a lot of the estimates now per pupil are over $35,000 per student. So please do not let anyone ever tell you that the Washington DC schools are underfunded. I mean, they are paying higher tuition than many private schools. We are all paying for that actually, because it's federal. So, I mean, this is a school system that was turning out bottom of the barrel results for decades, got a little bit of an improvement because of a relatively free charter law in the district. But nevertheless, I mean, this is a system that has had problems for a long, long time. And the pandemic just decimated it because a lot of kids stopped going to school functionally. It turns out that a laptop is not a acceptable substitute. And if you put kids on laptops for 2.5 years, a lot of them don't come back to school. And we're finally seeing, I mean, it is enraging to see like the New York Times and elsewhere finally start to acknowledge the absolute devastation to so many millions of children's educations that happened. I mean, this was, there is no excuse. There was no excuse even in like May, June of 2020 for shutting the schools. And that's even if you were on the more cautious side of the spectrum when it comes to like the virus itself, it became clear pretty early on that children are not getting seriously affected by this. And then just as a matter of prioritizing, you know, societal functions, right? If you have casinos open and schools closed, that's a matter of priorities. And unfortunately, the fact that schools stayed closed for so long had so much more to do with teachers' unions, political power, than it did with any analysis of any kind of risk analysis in terms of the virus, any kind of you know, seriousness with in terms of prioritizing what activities for society are actually important. And then we were told that, oh, it'll be fine. Like, it'll be fine that we just shoved all these kids into like unmonitored virtual learning for years at a time. And now finally, when it almost doesn't matter, we're getting those kinds of admissions from the New York Times, which always likes to print all the news that's fit to print 3 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Where does, just forever, I always think this is such an interesting point about how much money is being spent, because I know the reflexive response you're supposed to have to any problem in the school system is, well, they need more money. And if you listen to Randy Weingarten, who I think is an evil person. I mean, I actually think that what she does is really destructive and dishonest, and that she hides behind the needs of children in order to help lazy socialist adults is pretty grotesque. That's just my view. What she did during COVID is unforgivable. She's almost as bad as Fauci. Where does all the money go? Right. They always say we need more money. $35,000 a person in D.C., a pupil in D.C. Where does the money go?
It's a really good question. And the answer is largely to things that have nothing to do with the classroom. In some states, it's so bad that, for example, in Illinois, for every additional dollar that's spent on education, generally, only 11 cents is making it to anything having to do with the classroom. That's the salary of the teacher, paying for the building, supplies, blah, blah, blah. So like, you know, almost 90% of the money is going outside of that system. So what's it being spent on? Well, it's being spent on a massive administrative hiring spree. We now have the smallest proportion of teaching staff to non-teaching staff that we've had since the 1950s. That's the number that's been going down over time, or rather going up, that we have more administrators every year vis-a-vis teaching positions. And this makes it really hard to talk about how much money we actually spend in the United States on education. We are a top 2 or 3 country per pupil, depending how you count all of these funds. Our problem is not money. We are very, very generous. The American people have been generous for decades, pulling out more and more money in taxes going to the education system in America. The problem is the structure of the education system and what that money is spent on. But it's really, really difficult to convince people of that, because on the ground, they see shortages, right? Because this money is so misspent, they'll go to their first grader's classroom and there isn't enough money for supplies, and the teacher is paying out of her own salary for, you know, whatever, like for equipment for the classroom. And they see that and they're like, well, obviously we're not spending enough money, but that's not the problem. The problem is that people like Randy Weingarten are setting the priorities of where the district spends money, and what they spend money on are adding more administrative staff, like massive pensions for all those administrative staff. And then all kinds of like tech buy-ins. I mean, there's a lot of just incredible waste in the system. And that's before you get to what they're actually teaching and whether or not it's worthwhile, and whether they're teaching kids how to read or whether they're teaching them to be little anti-racist, you know, cultural revolutionaries. But all of that is not a matter of not being enough money. And in fact, you know, I think it's long past time that we take that money and give it to parents. I mean, I know you're a big proponent of school choice. I am as well. It's only a matter of fairness. Imagine what parents could do with $35,000 per child per year in terms of their children's education. I guarantee you they'll do a better job than Randy Weingarten.
Yeah, it seems very straightforward. But obviously the Democrat Party and the teachers' unions are a symbiotic organism. We'll come back and talk about Mark Cuban and DEI here in just a second. But, you know, on this podcast, we try to cut through the noise and the nonsense, the ulterior motives out there. And that's also what my colleague Mark Chaykin does for the stock market. Mark worked on the stock market for 50 years. Across those decades, he invented three new indices for the NASDAQ and has predicted some of the biggest market shifts of the past decade, including the recent mania in AI stocks. Mark says the majority of Americans are about to miss out on a critical turning point in this AI frenzy. He's calling this a new dawn for U.S. stocks, and Mark predicts dozens of specific companies will be impacted in just the next 90 days. That's why Mark has agreed to share one of his favorite AI stocks to buy now with you. He put everything you need to know in a new presentation. Go to 2024AIStock.com. That's 2024AIStock.com. 2024AIStock.com. Paid for by Chaykin Analytics. So Mark Cuban is a rich guy who owns the Dallas Mavericks. He's worth billions of dollars. He's on Shark Tank. He made a lot of money really selling a company that was effectively, well, not worthless after he sold it, but worth a whole hell of a lot less than what he sold it for. Was it broadcast.com, right? But he's weighing into the DEI debate a lot and not looking very smart when he does it. What is Mark Cuban doing?
He doesn't seem to be able to get out from under certain premises of what he thinks DEI means, these kind of nice sounding platitudes about wanting to treat people equally and valuing diversity and so on. And he just keeps looping back into those platitudes when people like Chris Rufo show him that, in fact, that's not what it means, and shows a bunch of, you know, examples and documents by actually this is about declaring any disparities inherently illegitimate and trying to equalize outcomes between different racial groups, between the sexes. Because when you say it like that, it sounds insane, right? Especially, I mean, I think sex is one of the easiest grounds on which to say that. I mean, it is it's an insane premise for anybody who's actually lived in the world and met women and met men to assume that outcomes between them in all ways would be 50-50. That is the kind of premise that if you go in, you can only achieve through tyranny. It's just not going to happen any other way, because men and women have radically different interests. They live radically different lives. They have different responsibilities. All of these things, I guess, are now crime think. But it's an obvious sort of you don't even need to know much about the DEI apparatus. You don't need to know all the theory to say this is an absurd goal. It's an absurd goal to say that men and women's outcomes should be identical, right?
I'm fond of pointing out that, for everyone, you know, is that if you really believe in disparate impact, someone has to explain what do we do about the fact that 90% of homicide inmates are men.
Right.
I'm pretty sure it's because men are the ones killing people.
Disparate impact. Right. Which I've actually had people online try to explain to me that actually women are just as violent as men.
Wow.
It's funny. It comes from like the red pill side of the internet. They're like, actually, mm-hmm. There's this mass underreporting of abuse, like physical abuse by women. I mean, it might be underreported because men are ashamed, but like the reason that there's a disparity is because one is stronger and more violent and the other one is unable to. Like, women effectuate violence in sneakier ways. Anyways.
MMA fighter. I've never been on a date with a woman who could beat me up in my entire life. Not once. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, this is pretty straightforward stuff.
Yeah. Well, I really do think like generations of sort of feminist action movies with female heroes has genuinely made a lot of people, because we don't live very physical lives, a lot of us anymore, made people delusional about the strength difference between men and women. It's not like, for example, height, where like, yeah, men are generally taller than women, but there's a lot of overlap. You know, go out of the house any given day, you'll see a woman who's taller than, you know, a man walking around, right? That's not how strength is. It's not that much of an overlap. There's a very, very tiny overlap between the strongest women and the weakest men. I mean, there is just an enormous physical difference in terms of upper body strength, in terms of speed, even something like reaction time, right? It's just enormous, enormous differences. But Mark Cuban is kind of doesn't want to accept that the premise of all of these structures is that radical premise of perfect parity between different groups, because when you say it outright, people immediately know that that's absurd. Whereas when you couch it in the layers about equity and that dumb little graphic that's always going around with the people watching the baseball game, right? It's just about giving somebody a boost who hasn't had you know, the same opportunities, but no two people will ever have the exact same opportunities. No two people will have the same family background, the same genetic endowment, the same, you know, just sheer chance. I mean, I'm sure that Mark Cuban in his business endeavors had access to opportunities that other people did not, just by virtue of not being Mark Cuban. That kind of radical egalitarian premise is more absurd the more plainly it's laid out, but Mark Cuban doesn't want to accept that in many ways.
Could Mark Cuban spell egalitarian? I'm just kidding. You don't have to answer
that. That's a good question.
Just putting it out there. He's a billionaire and I'm not, so he knows something. He knows, you know, right place, right time. Inez Stepman, everybody, Independent Women's Forum. You're on Twitter, right? You're on all the good things. People can follow you there.
Yep. You can follow me. It's at Inez Velcher there.
And her husband has a great book, by the way, which I think you can, if you're watching on the YouTube, The War on History by Jared Stepman. Jared's a great guy, buddy of ours. He's your husband, so I think it's safe to assume that he's your buddy, but he's buddy of mine too. Yeah. Yes, you can check out Jared's book. And Inez, thanks for hanging out. Good to see you.
It's great to see you. Thanks for having me.
The Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been helping America's heroes and their families since 9/11. Hero first responders and service members who serve our communities and our country. Those who die in the line of duty or are catastrophically injured. Veterans who fought for our nation's freedom only to return home, fall on tough times, and become homeless. Heroes like Buffalo, New York firefighter Jason Arno and his family. Arno was killed while protecting his community, battling a warehouse fire. He left behind his wife and a young daughter. In their darkest hour, Tunnel to Towers provided Arno's wife and daughter with a mortgage-free home. The foundation lifted a financial burden, enabling them to stay in the home where they made memories with their hero. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. Support the families of America's greatest heroes, the families of fallen first responders like Jason Arno, plus Gold Star families with young children, catastrophically injured service members, and homeless veterans. Donate $11 a month at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. If you are an accredited investor, U.S. oil and gas should be part of your investment portfolio. Visit LabradorEnergy.com. Beyond the possibility to invest in a sector that historically delivers sound returns, when you invest with Labrador Energy, you may be able to structure your investment to offset active or passive income. According to many sources, U.S. oil and gas drilling remains one of the best tax-advantaged income investments available. Visit LabradorEnergy.com. You may be able to reduce your tax liability while investing in a sector that has historically delivered sound returns. Learn more at LabradorEnergy.com today.
Offer for accredited investors only. Past performance is no indication of future results. Investing involves risk. Consult your legal, tax, and financial advisors and read the prospectus before making any investment decisions. Visit LabradorEnergy.com for the prospectus and more information.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.